Welcome to America's Cannabis Conversation, heard at americascannabisconversation.com. We're part of the W420 Radio Network, and each week we provide you with information, education, and insight into the exploding medical and recreational cannabis industry. W420RadioNetwork.com. Time now for the lowdown on another high-time experience. Here's 420 lifestyle correspondent Rich Walkoff.
There are many advocates for medical cannabis, but none more compelling and compassionate than our guest today, Matt Grimshaw, founder of Vets Grow, teaching veterans with PTSD how to grow cannabis, tied in with the Veterans Cannabis Group. Matt, thanks so much for your time. And I guess when you look at the struggle for so many veterans, over 500,000 from Iraq and Afghanistan dealing with PTSD, and so many places that cannabis is not legal, I guess that's where you come in, huh?
Well, yeah. Thanks for having me on the show. Mainly, it's about trying to help veterans normalize more than anything else, because cannabis, I've seen personally, it brings veterans back to some state of normality as opposed to the regular stress they've incurred, especially combat veterans through their service. But it's more than that, because cannabis has a very long and complicated history through the scheduling in the 70s by President Nixon that causes veterans some very, very specific problems. Because while it's been legalized in many states, as we all know, that doesn't change the federal Schedule I status. And because veterans predominantly rely on the Department of Veterans Affairs for healthcare and many, many other services, it basically cuts them out of the loop, because cannabis is still Schedule I, the VA is still a federal entity, and as such, they can't even talk about cannabis use as an alternative to opiates. And so at the moment, what we tend to have is an organized government-funded infrastructure that pushes pharmaceuticals onto veterans, whether they want it or not, and I'm determined to try and create an alternative for them.
Well, that's awesome, and I think a lot of people would be in your corner and saying, look, they paid the ultimate price. Some never came back. Some came back with psychological wounds and physical wounds, and if cannabis can be of help to them, what's standing in the way of that? Well, you talk about it, the federal ban. Now, the Veterans Cannabis Group, which you're allied with, the legal and medical advice that they provide, that is so instrumental. So talk a little bit about how you've teamed with them and what they're doing.
Sure. Well, the Veterans Cannabis Group was the first veteran organization that paid any attention to me. I called all of them when I first had the idea to make a documentary about teaching a veteran to grow cannabis. And he was the only guy that took me seriously. He's an Iraq War veteran himself, and coming from California, he'd always been around, you know, the cannabis culture. And so when he got back and found he had PTSD, he started self-medicating to deal with his own symptoms. Then friends started helping, and he started the group off his own back in order to advocate and educate veterans like him on the alternatives of going straight down the opiate path, which we all know has caused a lot of the suicide epidemic we see around us. I mean, the very idea of giving someone that's, in a very suicidal state a drug that clearly says may cause suicidal thoughts on the packaging is just ludicrous to me, but that's against the point. Now the Veterans Cannabis Group is trying to expand over the course of last year and this year to more and more states, especially the states where it's still completely prohibited, on a mission of education. They have a brand new event that's coming up on the weekend of the 29th of February in Sacramento. It's free for veterans to come to, and that's basically an education event. It helps them deal with issues with the VA, healthcare, all of that sort of stuff. But really, again, it's veterans are a very independent bunch of people. And all they want really is to get their independence. And cannabis really does help them from that perspective, because it's an instant solution to a trigger problem. Whereas, any pill you're going to take is going to take at least 30 or 40 minutes to activate. And so cannabis is the solution if they're in a spot and they have a PTSD event and need help there and then. I don't think I've seen anything else.
Yeah, now you have been working with Dr. Larry Bedard, who is a Marin County ER physician, and you're a medical science consultant. He is a Navy veteran, and he spoke of, in a recent podcast that you had presented, of the 2017 American Academy of Medicine and Science conducting 10,000 studies that verifies the substantial evidence that cannabis is helpful in treating chronic pain, sleep apnea, nausea from chemotherapy, PTSD, muscle spasm, insomnia. The list goes on and on. Yet you're fighting an uphill battle to see the see cannabis being changed from a Schedule I drug. But maybe the influence of veterans and veteran support groups like Vets Grow and like Cannabis Vets Group can be a catalyst to change.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the first mission for any group that's trying to help educate the country about cannabis is education, is showing what cannabis is, what it isn't, and dispelling the fears that are associated with it. And I think veterans are uniquely placed to do that because they're the last bipartisan group left in America. I mean, both Reds and Blues want to help our veterans. And so I see veterans really as the sort of first through the door guard that can prove what cannabis can do to help with a lot of mental issues, but also a lot of physical ailments, chronic pain, sleep issues. That's something I personally use cannabis for, to get to sleep in the evening. But also, you know, the CBD creams, the muscle spasm creams, all of it's a revolution in healthcare for veterans. But they all find themselves stuck between a rock and a hard place because they're forced into either paying full price for it, which, as anyone in California knows, is extremely expensive, or relying on the VA, who cannot even recommend cannabis. I mean, they can't even talk to you about it. Dr. Larry was the gentleman that really educated me on the history of cannabis, because he was in the Navy in the 60s when they actually were writing the drug rehab program. And he built Marine ZR system, for what I understand, and Marine General's emergency room. He's now retired, but he still works on the Marine County Board of Health. And what he doesn't know about cannabis, you can write on the back of a postage stamp, really. It's all of the reading he's done, all of the educating he's done, for my own perception, has been very much to create the image that we're on the start of a very long road to acceptance. I mean, for instance, he told me that I think it was 50 or 60% of ER physicians are suffering burnout and using opiates, and some are addicted. And I mean, I don't know about you, but I'd much prefer my doctors to sparking up a joint as opposed to popping a whole bunch of opiates to deal with their own stresses. So this is a problem that's... veterans are a means to an end. They show what the problem is and how cannabis can help the solutions. But the problem itself is far-reaching, way beyond that. So first responders, doctors, anyone in a very stressful position really could use cannabis to help deal with those circumstances. But veterans are just, I think, the best and quickest way to help because of the bipartisan nature of their support.
Right. Now, Matt, you're a documentarian and you went around the country speaking, meeting, and teaching vets how to grow cannabis. Tell me about your experiences, how it would vary from the so-called blue states to the red states, where in the red states, in most of the country, it's still verboten, and in the blue states, far more accepting. But we have this great dichotomy in this country that hopefully will be bridged soon.
So it's a very, very complicated matter. I worked with a couple of lawyers as well on Vets Grow in order to try and understand the issues myself. And it's almost a week-to-week problem with regards to what the laws are. Because the only way that the states that have legalized cannabis could push it through is to allow the counties to back out if they wanted to, which is why you get places like Marin County, where I live, that doesn't have a single dispensary outside the medical industry. We're forced to rely on deliveries. But one thing I learned all around the country is cannabis is seen very differently depending on what state it is and what culture that state has. And you can literally cross the county line and go from being legal to be completely busted. And there's lots of stories of veterans who try to grow their own doing this same thing. I personally think that anywhere in the country, it should be a veteran's right to grow their own cannabis, because the relationship a veteran builds while growing their own medicine is very, very different to just your typical grower. They really do take it on and nurture it a great deal. So I've lost track of where I was going with that one.
No, he's saying that how different it is in the southern states, in right. the Midwest, versus the East and West coasts, where you have a more open and accepting, you know, culture and community.
Yeah, it definitely, it does split very likely along the political spectrum lines of right and left, as you'd imagine. But that's generally due to lack of information available in a lot of the prohibited states. So several of the new states that have joined up to the Veterans Cannabis Group are from prohibited states, like Texas, for instance. And they have the unenviable position of, first of all, trying to get their locality on board, then trying to get their state on board, let alone the Fed. So what, it's only a handful of states. I think it's five or six now that are still 100% prohibited, 38 that are now medical, and the rest are recreational, including DC. But I'm now seeing stories saying that the current administration is going to try and push back on that and turn around the massive gains we've made. So this is a very important year for anyone that cares about cannabis legalization and helping veterans, because the two are tied at the hip.
Yeah, and with more than 20 veterans a day committing suicide, the opioid addiction, abuse and epidemic, alcoholism, depression, anxiety, anger management issues, divorce, rage against family members and friends in fits of despair. I mean, we can chronicle them forever. And if cannabis is a remedy, how awesome would it be to see a uniting of left and right, Republican and Democrats, to look for the better futures and lives of those who fought for our freedoms, to achieve that in a healthier way through cannabis?
Absolutely, but I'd take it even one step further, and I think it's in the country's national interest. And I say this as a freshly minted citizen of just 2 years now, but it's in our complete national interest to change this legal situation, not just to help veterans and everyone with mental illness, but if you look at all of the wonderful pharmaceuticals that could come out of it, if you look at all of the wonderful side products that could come out of hempcrete, polymers, all of this amazing research, because cannabis is still Schedule 1, the fact is the National Science Foundation can't even research it. They can't touch it. In fact, one of the companies I bumped into in my veteran travels, I think called Biopharma Research, they're based in Monterey, and the CEO is an ex-Navy SEAL, and he's trying to get pharmaceutical grade cannabis pushed through at the federal level, and he doesn't want to quit. And everywhere I've turned, veterans seem to be this key to changing the perception of cannabis in the public's eye, from, you know, the atypical van full of stoners just going, whoa, dude, and eating pizza, to the reality of the situation, which is what the fastest growing demographic of cannabis users is senior citizens. And they're finding out that all of the stories they've been told over, what, 80, 100 years of prohibition are lies, flat out lies. And they're, you know, a secondary demographic I think could change the image. But really, it's veterans, for me. They've paid into the system. We owe them a debt of gratitude. And so I personally think we should be getting the hell out of their way and letting them smoke as much cannabis as they really like. Why are we even making this a question? But it does have all sorts of knock-on effects. Like, there's issues with medical. Apparently, in some legal medical states, if a veteran gets a medical card, then they can no longer carry a firearm. And if you're a veteran in this country, you can probably understand that's quite a big deal. So veterans are both this necessary pool of veterans are this group that we both seem to love and ignore with equal measure here in the States. But they're also a group that is fundamentally American. I mean, what is America without its veterans? They're the ones that have set the tone and executed executive policy for whichever president has been in power. And most of them don't, you know, want that much gratitude. I've tended to find, you know, thank you for your service doesn't fly very well. What they want is help. What they want is interaction. What they want is to be part of America again, instead of being this subclass that's viewed as an accountancy line bill by most of the people that are in power. So cannabis is a It's a key to many, many other subjects to do with veterans, but it's the one I think that starts the conversation best because it just helps. I mean, all you have to do is find a veteran that's used cannabis for PTSD and they'll tell you. Don't take my word for it.
Yeah, so they can be literally the tip of the spear to hopefully bring about the federal legalization because it would be so beneficial to so many, not just veterans, but they're the ones who get acknowledged more readily when they come forward, either talking about their service to the country or in uniform and saying, look, this is helping me.
Right.
And perhaps through the change in the banking laws, or the MORE Act, or the Marijuana Opportunity Reinvestment and Expungement Act, the Safe Banking Act, the Secure and Fair Enforcement Banking Act. These are before the House or have passed the House and could be going to the Senate. Well, there's no better way to get acknowledged in the Senate than if you're in uniform or telling stories about your service to the country and needing this cannabis to help make your life better back home.
Right.
So Matt, thanks so much for your time. If people want to reach you and learn more about Vets Grow and what you're up to.
Yep. You can get me directly on my website, which is thedocumatarian.com. It's thedocumatarian.com. Or you can see me, go to the Monster Gardens YouTube channel, or you can just go to YouTube, type in Vets Grow and that'll bring up the whole series. And then you can see for yourself how cannabis helps veterans. I basically spent the whole of 2019 making a 9-episode documentary series where I taught a Vietnam veteran called Al up in Sonoma to grow his own medical cannabis completely legally with a legal team and a medical team. And what you see online is the result. And now I'm trying to create sequel works to try and help more veterans around the country, especially in places where it's prohibited, to change people's attitudes about cannabis.
Well, as if I can borrow the phrase, thanks for your service. Matt Grimshaw, founder of Vets Grow, Rich Walkoff on the W420 Radio Network.
Are you interested in learning more about cannabis? Have you thought about starting your own cannabis business but don't know how? If so, we invite you to join the cannabis conversation with other people like you who are looking at the exciting opportunities in this exploding business. Listen to America's Cannabis Conversation. You'll hear from industry experts and get insights into the cannabis industry. For archived shows and for more information, log on to americascannabisconversation.com. It's time for Women in Cannabis on America's Cannabis Conversation, part of the W420 Radio Network.
Didn't you get the memo?
Here's Chase Roberts.
Welcome back to the conversation. This is Chase Roberts, Women in Cannabis correspondent for the W420 Radio Network. It is a pleasure to introduce AC Moon. She is an innovator, 20-year-plus cannabis infusionist, master cultivator, consultant, contributing author for Grow Magazine, teacher, judge at the Emerald Cup, and named International Business Innovator of 2020 by the International Association of Top Professionals. This year, she's a guest speaker at the Women in Cannabis Expo, and she also is the founder and owner of Crop Tops Greenhouse and Harvest Moon Munchies. Hello, AC, how are you?
Hi, Chase, how are you doing? How's everybody doing today? Thanks for having me.
Of course. So great to have you here. You've been in the industry a long time. And I was wondering, how did you start?
That's such a backhanded question for me. I grew up in the industry. So I would say that I was born as a second generation legacy farmer. I had a lot of background with prohibition, of parents that were survivalists and bikers and things like that, you know, out in the woods. My mom was a firefighter and she had cancer. And when I first was out into the world, pretty much surviving on my own, living on the streets when I was a teenager, I joined the advocacy groups and found myself really learning what the purpose of our energy is and advocacy, and went and found my first job down in San Francisco and in like 1999, and started working at the cannabis clubs way down in the Bay. And then shortly after became a supplier for them and went on to a world of doing 1,000 other things in cannabis.
Yeah. And it's you, you're an old timer, even though you're probably one of the youngest old timers out there.
Yes, it's true. It's super true. I call it like the, you know, my whole life has been a career in cannabis, like my entire life, lifetime career.
Yeah, truly. And I wanted to ask you, you have experienced so many facets of the industry. Can you let our listeners know some of your certifications that you have that are, you know, involved in the industry?
Certifications alone, I have a pretty broad expansion of education in general, as well as certifiable and verifiable certifications. I really love educating. I love educating myself and regurgitating and tenoring all that information out into the world. I really love, you know, the science aspect of it. So in my nights where a lot of people are probably drinking a beer or something, I'm normally educating myself. So I spend my time smoking a joint and cramming my mind full of stuff. So at this point, you know, I have degrees in horticulture. I'm certified in CGMP. I'm certified in IPM. Certified in FDA, OSHA, HAZMAT, ISO, Sigma 6. I'm a certified master grower, and also I am a patented innovator with 21 micro patents and 17 trademarks.
I do not know. Hats off to you, AC. I do not know how you find the time. Is there any of those patents you want to mention to our listeners that they would recognize or are pivotal, or are they just proprietary for the processes you're doing for your companies right now?
My first invention was, a lot of people that have been in the industry are familiar with Northern California industry, rather. High Times and Emerald Cup is where I launched it. And I am the inventor of croptopsgreenhouses.com, which is an instant pop-up portable greenhouse that protects plants from storms and used as a quarantine for pest management, isolation, and tissue culture. And so that in itself has 21 micro patents on it, which means that 21 different aspects of it are federally protected as intellectual property.
And you started that in 2012, correct?
Yes, I started inventing in 2010 after dealing with some serious federal raids and really realizing that the industry was changing at a really rapid point, and that if I didn't, you know, evolved, that I would dissolve. So I went ahead and sold my dispensaries and cooperatives that I had at the time and started inventing. So it took 6 years and I finally got my patents in 2018.
Congratulations. And you've been growing ever since. I mean, in every sense that you could possibly grow in the cannabis industry.
Absolutely. I've been actually cultivating cannabis for 23 years now. Harvest again, gosh dang it, after some storms just did a woozy on everybody.
I know you went to college at Humboldt, but are you in Grass Valley? Where are you located?
I am in Grass Valley right now. I've normally had property in Trinity County, Humboldt County, as well as Nevada County. I'm a trifecta resident of California. I'm born and raised here. And so all those home bases that I've created. Right now, I'm cultivating my 40 acres near Tahoe, and we've been dealing with a lot of forest fires. So I've definitely been over in this area since I got back from the Caribbean.
Wow. 40 acres.
Oh, yeah.
A lot of work. Beyond. How many variants would you say you're carrying right now?
I always think of variants. I keep thinking of Delta, like Delta 9, COVID-19 variant.
I should be using that terminology right now.
Right now, I have cultivated the same cultivar, which is Goo, which is branded Grizzly Goo, G-O-O. It's Afghani cross that I have been cultivating for 21 years. I've had the same mother going for 19 years.
Wow.
And so I also am doing some gas and fuels, which is, I believe it's birthday cake, which is a pretty standard cross cultivar right now.
You have another company, Harvest Moon Munchies, that you also started 20 years ago. Please, tell our listeners a little bit about that. What do you offer through that company via consult or product or what have you?
Well, I've merged all my companies at this point in time. Is I just got back from the Caribbean and I own IndicaInnovations.com. And so Indica Innovations International, I've taken the concept of when I first started cultivating, going to college many, many years ago, I started Harvest Moon Munchie Company. So in 2001, I started creating organic infused edibles. My mom had, you know, raised me off grid, pretty much teaching me how to cook confections, any type of homesteading, you know, breads and creating everything from scratch. So growing everything in your own yard, it became really easy for me to learn infusing at a very, very young age. I was already doing that in my homesteading life, kind of with the DIY, you know, type of versatility in life. And so when I first started infusing, I saw a lot of cancer patients down in the Bay Area where I had, my mom had cancer. I was dealing, I had several friends that had HIV at the time, many different types of ailments from multiple sclerosis down. And I had a serious grudge against the pharmaceutical companies, the massive amounts of drug addictions that were going on. I had friends that were grinding up pills and snorting them. And I was like, what is going on? I was really young and I'm kind of the redhead with a mission. And I was, you know, found a way to make, you know, just a little bit of chocolate change people's addiction to pills and people's addiction to everything. So I used Harvest Moon Munchie Company through the entire prohibition years as a distribution point for large amounts of infusions, so all organic edibles that, you know, I would highly concentrate for medical use that pretty much could, was a high enough THC value to battle the opiate addictions and other addictions that were going on at the time, as well as help remediate some of the pain that, that the actual patients were feeling. And so I had a real passion about that. It kept me going. You can read about it in Cannabis Conversations. I think there's a couple other books that have the story of my entry into it is a passion for trying to help with cancer patients and trying to help everybody else. So.
What a great movement. And, you know, fantastic that you have pursued this for the benefit of all.
Yeah, unfortunately, you know, later on, my whole family passed away from cancer, and I continued through the people that I interact with, you know, the patients, the people later on became innovators, you know, everybody that I realized was, you know, in pain. I became like a passionate advocate, a motivator, a self-expressionist for cannabis, and really want to, you know, just combine the skills of homesteading and back to earth and show people how to save themselves through plants and save our mentality and save our planet through all of that.
I'm sorry to hear about your losses.
Hey, everything that happens to us makes us who I am. It makes us all who we are. So all the negative in your life, it creates today, and today is beautiful. So I'm grateful for everything.
Oh, that is beautiful. I wanted to ask, you know, what else are you seeing that's different from when you started? I mean, I know the industry has boomed and thrived, but are there some things you could really pinpoint and pick out that have changed just so drastically since you got
in the United States?
Yeah.
Oh, wow. I mean, the whole thing is really completely a different aspect of things. As I have been consulting in several different countries, you know, I just got back, like I said, working in the Caribbean with people that barely get paid $2.25 an hour, or they're semi-exploited to be into the industry. It gives a really different perspective against the grassroots of what California industry has been. And California industry originally, you know, we were built off of the hippie movement, off the grassroots, off the back to earth movement, or people were just supplying their own. And through supplying our own, we had a community of trade and, you know, trade and commodity. Barter and trade was really the grassroots of our entire American culture and many other cultures, as a matter of fact, you know, our trades of goods. And so that, you know, obviously became a commodity, which is now blown out. So originally we had this really amazing community of people that were advocates that had passion because, you know, when you had the balls to go out there and risk your freedom, to risk your kids' freedom, to risk everything that you had to be a part of this movement, you're a different person than the person that's walking in into the CBD movement now. That's like, I have my dad's money and I'm going to go create a tincture. You're a totally different person than the person that was fighting and running from cops and hiding from helicopters 20 years ago. And so when I see how the industry has changed and how my community has really changed, I mean, a lot of people are more in poverty now than they've been in forever because of the overtaxation, the lack of equity in ownership and the ability to enter the legal cannabis space. Myself, as a federal raid victim, as also a legacy grower, I can't even afford to legalize my own land right now because I am so overgrown. And then on top of that, there's just legitimately no money to be made in the industry in a lot of ways right now for anybody in California because of the overtaxation. And because of the overtaxation and people's desperation in order to gain footage in the industry, and this is true in all the countries that I'm working in or consulting in, is that the community starts getting shattered because everybody has this need. They see themselves going broke. They can't afford to do what they need to do or innovate their lives. And so therefore, instead of communifying, you know, they kind of start competing.
Yeah.
And that competition starts kind of dissolving the community more and more into where, you know, you have to be really attentive and conscious of the fact that we need to stay connected, even though we're taking this outside investor's money to keep going. And we're all kind of, nobody's any better than the rest. Everybody's on the level playing field right now of semi-screwed.
I think most of America, you know, idealizes this cannabis boom without realizing the facts you're saying, that when you're in it, it's not all glory and money.
There's absolutely not.
Yeah, I think that's kind of a myth that's happening and it's slowly becoming, you know, the truth is coming out. Do you know of any advocacy groups that you personally work with or help to keep the community going?
Oh, we have many up in Humboldt and Trinity County, Northern California in general, Nevada County Alliance. All the different small alliances that have gone on up here have really, you know, even Santa Rosa has a really great alliance of, it's just the, you know, grassroots community, people still fighting for craft farmers, still fighting for the small people. And right now with all the acquisitions going on and the amount of poverty that's gone on in the systems and, you know, that's one of the reasons that I went international was to try to help the medical movement with advocacy and building businesses in other locations that were, they're at the same space that we were 20 years ago. And trying to navigate that is amazingly hard because of the exploitation going on in every corner of the world.
Yes. And globally, who are the countries behind us that are the closest to getting completely in the game?
Oh my gosh, there is so many at this point. Uruguay, Paraguay, there's so many. There's now cannabis cultivation in Africa and Venezuela, Panama, there's so many that, I mean, soon a lot of the people don't understand that when we enter this space, you know, it's an agricultural space, it's a commodity space, or it's a food space, and it's an infusionary space, or it's an ancillary marketing space. So a lot of people want to see, as we were just discussing, that cannabis is kind of this hype point. They want to be involved because it has the glamour of being a culture. A whole culture behind it. And that community culture is being shattered by that glamification and that sensualization of what it is. When really, you know, a lot of my plants got broken from a storm last night. You're half covered in mud. You're working your ass off 14 hours a day, or you're standing in front of a stove doing infusions, cooking cookies, you know, or you're standing in front of a computer for 15 hours a day. No matter what you do, you're going to do it just the same as you do anything else. So be prepared when you enter this industry, because you're doing all that. And when you get to the nitty gritty facts of it, it is federally still illegal that the people touching every aspect of this plant, every aspect of oils, any type of THC down to a drop of it, you are federally breaking the law. So if you don't have an ounce of rebellion in you, you probably shouldn't try to gain entrance into the community. Yeah. Because you're not on the same wavelength of thinking. We're trying to innovate our government by standing this rebellion strong. And so I really ask people all over the world, if you want to enter it as an advocate and then make business a secondary thing, because otherwise this won't work.
AC, and with that, our time is out. I want to tell you what an honor it is to have you on here as a grassroots old timer. It's really been amazing. And thank you for all your insight going 20 years back. And for our listeners, if you've missed any of this great interview with AC Moon, you can go to W420 Radio Network and click on the archive section to listen to this and other great interviews. And we'll be right back.
You're listening to America's Cannabis Conversation on W420RadioNetwork.com.
America's newest and fastest growing cannabis-focused radio network is expanding across the country and looking to add to our sales and marketing team. America's Cannabis Conversation offers listeners insight and information on the exploding world of cannabis. It also gives advertisers the opportunity to reach a hyper-targeted audience, literally neighborhood by neighborhood, in markets all across the country. We're looking for a few motivated individuals that want to essentially run their own local business. To learn more about this exciting opportunity or to apply, visit americascannabisconversation.com.
This is Dan Perkins, and we're about halfway through today's conversation. I hope you have found the people interesting and helpful. In case you didn't hear all of the interviews in today's conversation, you can go to W420RadioNetwork.com after 5:20 p.m. to listen to this show. If you missed any of our previous shows, or you want to hear a particular show again, you can go to the archives and download a missed show anytime that's convenient for you. Our goal is to bring a high-quality program that is both entertaining and informative. For those of you who are in the industry, we hope we can continue to be your voice, telling the people of America the benefits of this amazing all-natural product. We have been surprised at the willingness of important people to come into this new program and talk about the challenges and opportunities in the cannabis industry. It's hard to believe that it's been 23 years since cannabis was made legal in California. I think the next 23 years might be even more exciting than the first 23. One more thing before we get back to the conversation. Should you have a question or a comment, please contact us at contact@W420RadioNetwork.com. That's contact@W420RadioNetwork.com. And now, back to the conversation. Welcome to the conversation. This is Dan Perkins, and today joining us is Bob Luciano, Mr. Natural. Welcome to the conversation, sir.
Good morning, Dan. Nice to be on your show.
Thank you for joining us again. I want to talk about a lot of things in this interview, and the first thing I want to talk about is, where did Mr. Natural come from?
Well, the name originally came from in Jamaica. I was down there. Me and my wife had started a restaurant down there. And I was in getting involved with the Rastafarian community. So we started a restaurant, and during the process, I used to read the comic book, underground comic book, Mr. Natural, when I was young. So when we started the restaurant, I'm involved with natural food, organic cultivation, organic clothing. So during the process, we picked up the name Natural. So they said we had a restaurant, and the terminology of Mr. Natural was shit happens, excuse my expression. Mm. But we were in Jamaica, and we were all involved with natural food, and I was involved with the natural lifestyle. The people started calling us Natural. So my wife said, yo, let's call the restaurant Mr. Natural. So that's how the name Natural came to be.
Good. So when we talked the last time, sir, you indicated you came back from Vietnam, you went to New York, you were down in Washington, D.C. at the Honor Guard, which is a tremendous honor for you, but it was also very depressing. So what happened after Arlington? What did you do?
Well, I was still, you know what, I couldn't take the Honor Guard anymore because it put me more into post-traumatic stress than anything else. So I wind up going into the 330 transportation company and did different details. I was in Fort Lee, Virginia at the time. So I started at that point because we were doing riot control, you know, so we were being trained for riots that were happening all over, I imagine all over the country. So we were being sent to DC involved with a riot. And when we were there, you know, we dismounted, and it affected me dramatically when some of the people that were protesting the war were Vietnam veterans in wheelchairs against the war. And I got trained for war, and I came back. It affected me dramatically between the Honor Guard and the burials and taking up arms against my brothers who fought, who were against the war that they fought for. So that affected me a lot. So I started, I went to the mental hygiene clinic at that time period. And that's when my realization was all that they really wanted to give you was drugs. This is in the military. And like, they really didn't want to hear nothing. They didn't want to help you with therapy. They wanted to give you drugs and just go on your way. So I started to utilize cannabis even then when I was still in the military. And it was easy to obtain because the Vietnam conflict was still going on. Wasn't determined the war yet. Got determined the war 40 years after we came back. You know, so there was a lot of effects that the government and not the veterans, but a lot of even these different organizations. I tried to join the VFW when I got out. They would not accept me in New Jersey because it wasn't a war. It was a conflict. So there was nobody to talk about it. The VA didn't want to hear about it. If you went to a psychiatrist, they'd give you more drugs. They'd increase your drugs. They'd give you drugs that you didn't even know the effects that they had, because you're always walking in like kind of a shuffle, as they would put it later on in life, the Thorazine shuffle. So wow. I started utilizing cannabis even then.
So when did you, how much after you went for mental health did you leave the service?
I was sought mental health in probably 8 months before I left the service.
Okay. All right. You went from Washington, D.C., you left the service, and where did you go? Did you go to Jamaica next?
Back to New Jersey, and I went and worked for, there was no job, so I became I worked for the Postal Service. They were the only ones hiring. And that's why I feel that cannabis industry involved with the Veterans Administration and the government, Project Transition. So we can talk about that on a later time period.
Sure. Love to. So then how long were you in Jersey?
Probably from until 1980.
Okay.
I moved to
Virginia.
And
then where did you go? Then you went to Virginia. Went to Virginia. And how long were you there?
Until 1986.
So you were there 6 years.
Yeah, but during the process time periods, I used to go back and forth to Jamaica a lot. I was learning more about the Rastafarian culture and cannabis and the culture, more involved with the culture with cannabis, because we, during the 70s, we weren't welcome, and we weren't definitely welcomed in Virginia.
Yeah.
So this is what I learned about cannabis. Remember I spoke on the first conversation about, it was during the equal rights process, I went to Vietnam. So it was in, I was enabled to move to Virginia from New York easily because of my experiences with cannabis in Vietnam and people from the South in the military. Mm-hmm. So it was a lot easier for me.
In our conversation today, we're speaking to Mr. Natural, who's going to tell us a little bit later about what he developed. But so you're in Virginia, you're going back and forth to Jamaica. Did you go to Jamaica permanently for any length of time?
Yes, I went there in 1987. And at that time period, I had got involved with a motorcycle bike rental business. And then we opened up the restaurant in 1989, me and my wife. So we had work, what they call work permits. So we had residency permits in Jamaica at that time period.
And what happened to you as your interest in cannabis evolved in Jamaica? What were you learning?
I was learning about a lot about the soil and compost and bat guano, which is a key element involved with soil to bring out a lot of the benefits and the medicinal benefits. You know, like we've come up with hydro after that, but there's no medicinal benefits from hydro. So I learned a lot about soil management. And what I learned in Jamaica that, you know, like when you cultivate, a lot of what you're doing comes from you. So it's a mind, body, and spiritual experience. And that's what I got out of Jamaica. That what you put into the herb is what you get back out of the herb. And based on the third world, I learned a lot of medicinal benefits there, because in Jamaica, as in Southeast Asia, they didn't have a lot of pharmaceuticals unless you were in the U.S. in the military, but the people themselves never had it. So they use cannabis in a lot of different medicinal benefits with other types of herbs. And that's where we've learned a lot about the infusion of herbs and cannabis, even there, and how we learned how to make different types of oils.
So we've got about 2 minutes to our first break. Tell me what, Mr. Natural, tell me what were you personally experiencing as you were using the product that you were growing?
When I was in Jamaica, that's where, again, I learned about a lot of different strains and the medicinal benefits, because there was no other type medications. So what we learned is that I started to learn to pull out a certain strain from a certain plant and separate the plants. So I learned that this one strain was really good. And when I came back to California, we started to crossbreeding the strains.
So is that when you met Justin?
I met Justin in 2010, 2009.
Okay.
And like California, we were becoming legal at that time period, and we were seeing the medicinal benefits it was getting through dispensaries. So the LA
right.
Gem Cup came up. So when the LA Gem Cup came up, you had to be a legal collective, and you had to be work with a dispensary. So at that point in 2009, I says, okay, we're not going to be no longer patients. We're going to open up a collective and distribute the weed to a lot of dispensaries through the dispensary group, because we won the cup, the LA Gem Cup. So
wow.
That's when we first found out that we were able, the other medical benefits from our strains that they were getting from dispensaries. Lake Forest was the first one.
Why don't we pause there, and we'll go to a commercial break. We're speaking with Mr. Natural, and he's talking to us about his adventure and his growth in personal development as it evolved the creation of the Mr. Natural product line of cannabis. We'll be right back after this message from our sponsor. We're back on the conversation today, and we're speaking with Mr. Natural, who is a entrepreneur who has an amazing life career. And if you didn't hear all of this interview, you can go to americascannabisconversation.com and you can listen to the rest of this interview and listen to previous interviews that we had with Mr. Natural and other programs. So go to americascannabisconversation.com. So we're back with Mr. Natural. So it's 2010. And you're now looking at you win the cup and you're starting to grow. Is that when you met Justin?
Yeah, we met him in 2010 after the High Times Medical Cannabis Cup. That's the second mm-hmm. cannabis cup that came up. And the second cannabis cup, everyone, you know, High Times Cup, they stopped utilizing it in Amsterdam. So as a cultivator, you would want to win the first cannabis cup as a hippie or anybody involved with cannabis, the High Times Cannabis Cup in America, the first one, just entering it was like, you know, a blessing to me. So we entered it and we won. We won the very first High Times Cup. The benefits with this is we never advertised in any one of the magazines. We never advertised our strains or anything until I met Justin. Was right after the 2010 cup. I met Justin in Sacramento.
Yeah. And tell our audience Justin's name, his last name.
Karapetian.
We've had him on the show, on our inaugural show. So you can listen to hear his story. So you met Justin and what happened?
Justin is a visionary in this industry. Justin, 2010, he had a dispensary, AMC. So I was getting out of the industry because, you know, like I'm old. I was just turned 69. But Justin, we had went to AMC because we were utilizing it in another dispensary, Chris's Corner. So we said, all right, let's go here also. He's making it advantageous to veterans also because they had contacted us about it through Chris's Corner. So I got to speak to him, and his whole projection of what he was going to do with AMC and making it available to veterans, veteran discounts, that was like brought me back into it where I said, I'm not going to retire. I'm going to stay here with you. All right, so what happened is the federal government came in and shut down all dispensaries in California, as far as I know of, in Sacramento, the other counties surrounding Sacramento. So what had happened, me and Justin kept in contact with each other. We said that, yo, this is not fair to veterans. So Justin got in touch with a Vietnam veteran, a helicopter pilot, Ted Smith, another 100% disabled veteran. And they created a board with the dispensary was CC101. So when that happened, we started to advertise, Justin, that we were only going to deal with veterans, not only veterans, but my strains. You could only purchase them through them for veterans because all the other dispensaries was closed up, but there was still veterans that needed cannabis. So Justin made it, advertised it. And we started to get into other type products involved with my strains, different strains, and going out on demos and exposing veterans to the benefits of cannabis versus their pharmaceuticals. So we started to come up with other SKUs, as we would call it, other type cannabis products for different type of disabilities. You know, we started coming out with tinctures and cones and coming out with specific codes for veterans. So Justin did more and more advertising and more and more marketing involved with our product with veterans, and he started getting involved with Weed for Warriors projects and a lot of other type veteran affairs. So it was the only place that you were able to get products was through CC101, or then later with his other company, they formed Colas. So that made it available throughout the state. And then they were involved, and then he was involved with San Francisco. So we made it available in San Francisco. We had already had the name in Southern California for products through Lake Forest Alternatives and a couple other dispensaries in Southern California. So now, through Justin, we became state known.
Let's drill down just a few minutes, if we could, in the time we have left. Talk about your products and what kind of issues you can help veterans deal with.
Veterans, when they go in, if you have a disability, let the Veterans Administration know, or your doctors, that you're utilizing cannabis. And that, you need to get it on your files. My feelings are, so they know. Because the more veterans that have on their files that they're utilizing cannabis versus the other pharmaceutical drugs, the more benefits we can get it for more veterans. You know, like, so we developed strains that were specifically for my disability, but my disability is like anybody else's disability. There's 100,000 other people that have the similar disabilities. So we created strains and made them available not only to me, but we gave them on the demos to other veterans and see how they affected them. Some veterans gave up their pharmaceuticals. Other veterans had problems with the VA because at that time period, if you had pain medication, they would suspend your medication if you were using cannabis. Where I haven't, you know, like, I have a prescription on file with the Veterans Administration. So, like, if it's available for me, it should be made available for every veteran that's using it medicinally. The pharmaceuticals hurt you versus cannabis.
So, Mr. Nashville, let's just roll that back a little bit. You have what from the VA? You have a prescription? What do you have that allows you to have it?
You know what? My recommendation, because I was in another state, turned into a prescription because I don't use any other kind of medications. Since 2007, they've taken blood tests on me probably every 6 months. The only medication that I have in my body is an antacid and cannabis. And I'm 240% say disabled. I have a stomach, back. PTSD is my primary disability, but my back and stomach and other are other on file with the Veterans Administration. But you can only be 100%.
It affects tens of millions of veterans. How did it help you? How did your cannabis strain help you with your PTSD?
Well, it enabled me to focus on other things besides negativity. It let me see what the government taught me to do and enabled me to be able to think and concentrate on other key factors is positivity. And it enabled me to use therapy and enabled me to group with other veterans and talk about our same situations that we all can talk about because we've all lived them. Man, my story being 100% is no different than anybody else's story, bro. All of us suffer the same disabilities in the same formats, no matter what it is. My pain is no worse than yours if you have pain, just like my post-traumatic stress is no worse than anyone else's, man. It's just not. So if cannabis helps us and it helps us heal and we could help other people during the process, why? If we fought for rights in all the other states, we were drafted during the draft era, and we fought for rights in all the other states. If I'm using medical cannabis, why can't I utilize it in all the other states?
Right. Fascinating story, Mr. Natural. Thank you for your time. We've been speaking with Bob Luciano, Mr. Natural, and talking about the cannabis strains that he's developed that he's used to treat himself and hundreds, if not thousands, of other veterans. Mr. Natural, how do people learn about you and your Mr. Natural products?
You could get in touch with Colas or Justin because he helped create this story. But majorly, we got acquired by Astralis Capital. So get in touch with Astralis Capital, and they can give you more information.
We'll put a link to them on the website. Mr. Natural, thank you so much for sharing your story and telling us what you have been able to accomplish. It's been a pleasure talking with you, and I'm proud to know you. And thank you for your service, not only to our country, but to your fellow veterans.
Thank you for making other veterans the ability to hear the story and maybe move forward that we could all get help, girl. Thank you for coming out with this.
You're welcome. So we've been speaking with Mr. Natural. He is an entrepreneur that developed cannabis strains to treat his PTSD and other elements. If you didn't hear all the interview with Mr. Natural, you should. You can pick it up by going to americascannabisconversation.com and look at the archive section. Thank you, and we'll talk to you again next week. Thanks for joining the conversation.
Thank you. Have a good day.
Thank you for taking part in America's Cannabis Conversation
at americascannabisconversation.com. Each week, we provide our listeners information, education, and insight into the exploding medical and adult-use cannabis industry. You'll hear from industry experts, elected officials, local growers, detractors, and more. Learn how to build your own cannabis business, how to grow the product, what's legal, and where it's legal. Tune in each week to hear the latest industry news and updates from the American Cannabis Industry Association in Washington, tips on investing in cannabis, personal success stories, and more. Join the conversation.
To hear this show in its entirety or to hear any of our archive shows, log on to americascannabisconversation.com and tune in for the next installment of America's Cannabis Conversation. W420RadioNetwork.com